Hola, y'all. It's Dr. Pookie, and welcome back, or welcome into, the Sexual Healing Podcast, where I talk about life from the top of your head to the bottom of your dusty, crusty feet, or perhaps they've been slickened with Vaseline. One can never be sure. From my perspective, as a black, same-gender-loving man in my 40s. And when I have a guest on the show, it might be a slightly different perspective. But today, you just get me. So let's get on into it. All right. So, what's been going on in the last week in my wacky world? Well, the highlight, happy one at least, is my little buddy, my nephew. He's graduating from kindergarten this week. Thursday will be his last day, I believe. Yes, it's Thursday this week. We went to his, they didn't call it a graduation at his school. They called it like a spring sing, where the kids actually learned songs and sang them to us. It was cute. And my nephew was down in front. I could barely see the top of his head because Uncle was struggling during his ceremony or his show. And speaking of Uncle struggling, so, in a desire to be transparent about, you know, if I'm going to talk with you guys about stuff that's going on with you, then I got to talk about stuff that's going on with me as well. So I have been experiencing some challenges, with the ears in the last 3-4 weeks, and I was kind of holding on to them because it wasn't anything major. It wasn't like really, really bad. I was just getting some intermittent pain, maybe 3-4 times a day for a second or two in either ear, if not both of them. And I just attributed it to congestion from sinuses because, you know, I'm seemingly allergic to everything nowadays, but not really. They did test all that, and I'm allergic to mold, dust, and I believe, not sure what the third one was, but nevertheless, it's allergy season, and though I have not had a lot of the runny nose, my eyes have been itching like crazy on occasion, my ear canals even itch, and I've just had a lot of congestion. So I just attributed that intermittent pain that I was having in my ears to just being a little backed up and extra pressure from the congestion, and that appeared to be the case. However, when I did go in and see my doctor for a checkup on the ears, because I was supposed to have a hearing test this month to test the integrity of my battered eardrums that have grown back, and I thought were doing well, and they are, but they did find some signs of infection in my left ear, which has been the problem child throughout this healing process. So I am back on antibiotics, and hopefully we'll get that shit knocked out within a week. But, you know, I think the thing that's been really challenging for me has been trying to balance this healing process, which is really at that point now where I'm about maybe 80%. You know, I feel good most mornings. It's not like I feel awful like I did before. It's not like when I get out the bed, I'm staggering all over the place. You know, it's relatively normal. I just don't have the stamina, and my muscles don't, you know, they're not as resilient as they used to be. So those are the things that I'm still having to rebuild. But I've returned to work. I haven't kind of returned to work. I have returned to work. And being the workaholic that I am, I have struggled to balance the work I needed to do in making up being off from work basically 4.5 months. So I was off in December, and then I got sick at the end of that month, and I've been sick all year. And I thought that I was making some good progress and had a bit of a setback. So I'm a little bummed about that. And, you know, so I kind of kept a low profile over the weekend, but I did go to an event for my church, and it was a great event, had a great time, was really nice to see people, reconnect. A lot of people are like, what's been going on with you? Where have you been? Haven't seen you. Or I saw you walking, but I couldn't get across the courtyard to you. So it was great to reconnect with some folks. However, when I got home that night, went in my room, took my clothes off, came back out, and I'm just kind of sitting there on my tablet, and my mom's like on the couch, and she's on her laptop working on some stuff. And I go to get up out of the recliner and was just really extremely lightheaded, more so than I'd ever been before. And I kind of leaned against the wall. I put my arm out and leaned against the wall just to kind of steady myself before I, was going to walk into, I think I was going to the kitchen for something or maybe the bathroom. I can't recall. Probably the kitchen. It seemed like I was standing there for quite a while, but apparently I wasn't there. I don't know how long I was standing there, but eventually I kind of heard myself babble for a second and I basically passed out and fell. Face first to the floor. Got lucky. I didn't tear my head up on anything. I could have hit the end table. I could have hit the curio cabinet. Luckily, I didn't have any of that shit go on. Although I still see visions of just blood all over the carpet runner. But that didn't happen, so I avoided that catastrophe with any sort of head wound or brain injury, just insane. And it's the first time I've lost consciousness in that way, and it scared the shit out of me. So I've been very much, I was very much like the old man for the rest of that evening. My mom, when I first fell, she yelled and she's like, "Do I need to take you to the ER?" And I said, "I don't know." just initially, I said something that I thought was "I don't know," but it was basically gibberish. And then eventually, I kind of came around and I told her, "No, I think I'm gonna check my blood pressure and I think I got up too fast and." And possibly I did, or my blood sugar was low. Though I had been eating at this event for almost 2 hours straight, between some shrimp and veggie platter and a little bit of fruit, a glass of wine, and a cream puff or two, I thought I really didn't need to eat anything else because I had been grazing for 2 hours. And unfortunately, it's possible that it may have been low blood sugar, combined with getting up too fast, because my blood pressure was normal when I checked it. And so it was really scary. So saw my doctor again on Monday because they wanted me to come back in to check the ears, and they said it's unrelated in all likelihood because I'm not having balance issues overall. So it's just been really challenging, really frustrating, and a bit traumatizing to balance this idea of healing fully, and really kind of getting back to normal. I think the really hard miles of recovery have been, I've walked those. I'm upright. I'm generally back to society, so to speak. I'm not having to spend all day in the bed or all day on the couch or all day in the recliner, or just lying on the floor to be halfway comfortable. I'm kind of back to functioning, but I definitely don't have the stamina, and I definitely just don't have the muscle integrity right now to do all the stuff that I want to do, such as getting rid of stuff in my storage locker and moving some stuff around in there and really just spring cleaning. I can't do it. I can lift some stuff, but I'll hurt for 3 or 4 days afterwards. So that's where I am. And I think I share all of this to just remind all of you that are within the sound of my voice to really listen to your body, pay attention to your health. If your doctor has recommended something to you, such as my doctor has basically said to me, "Hey, whenever you have any lightheadedness or dizzy spells, I want you to check your blood pressure. I want you to check your blood sugar. And I also want you to kind of recall how much water you've had because it could be any of those three things. You don't want it to be anything else because the next things on the list would be basically heart attack or stroke." So I've basically been told to, anytime I have lightheadedness, to monitor those three things. And and record them in my journal to share with my doctor so she can make the adjustments as needed in my medication. So, it can be difficult, I know, to be so aware of whatever illness you may be dealing with, to have to monitor your health, to take pills every day, to lay off the chicken wings, as my doctor has told me to, and eat more veggies. It can be challenging, but it's worth it. I can't stress enough that I wish that I had done some of those things in my 20s, because now I'm paying for them in my 40s. And the price will only become higher in my 50s. But I am working my way toward, I believe, vegetarianism. A good friend of mine suggested a 3-week vegan cleanse, so I'm thinking about it. I don't know. But we'll see how I feel about that. But yeah, so definitely. Keep an eye on what's going on with your body. Pay attention to what your doctor or your nurse tells you to do. And just make the investment now. I always say the pain of sacrifice is far less than the pain of regret. And if I had any illusions about that being a false statement, they are being completely crushed now, because I look back now and I'm like, ooh, had I maybe given up meat and given up this when I was 25, I'd probably be a lot slimmer than I am now. Which is not to say that I've lost weight, but I could be skinny, I could be thinner, and I could certainly be healthier, and maybe, the infection that I got would not have gotten so systemic and so holistic. So definitely beware of your health. Protect it while you're young, and certainly do everything you can to protect it as you get older. Because once it's gone, life changes. I can't stress that enough. So on a happier note, I don't know if I've talked about my writing process, so to speak. I have multiple writing projects, a couple of novels, I'm calling it a therapeutic memoir, and actually even an erotic novel that I'm working on. So I guess three different novels. All of them have very different tones to them, and I usually get a lot of writing done when my characters are kind of talking to me. It's often the case they'll talk to me when I'm possibly getting in the shower, or even when I'm asleep. When I wake up, sometimes they've woken me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I roll over and grabbed a pen and scribble down whatever it is they're saying to me, and I'm like, I'll get back to you when I wake up. Hopefully in about maybe 6 hours. One can never be sure about that. But my characters are talking again, so I'm hoping to finish recording early today and maybe get down to the coffee house early and get some of those thoughts down on the screen, get these fingers to work. But we'll see. But yeah, I guess I'll keep you guys in the loop about how that process is going, and certainly whenever one of these writing projects is done, I'll let you know when it's out. But all right, I'm gonna move ahead into the media portion. The media section is kind of almost like a word on the street, just different things that I've seen or come across in social media, as well as print media and just television, film, over the course of the last week. And the first thing that I came across that just had me smiling from ear to ear was I think it's a viral video of a young father sitting on the couch next to his toddler son, and they are having this conversation. And it was just so adorable. The little boy is just sitting there, with the expressions and just literally talking to his father, and you can't understand a word the boy is saying, and I'm sure his father can't either, but he's just engaging him in this conversation, and it reminded me of how I used to talk with my nephew when he was, I guess, pre-verbal, so to speak. He was clearly talking, but we didn't know exactly what he was saying. But he had points he was trying to get across, because you'd ask him to repeat it, and he would repeat it syllable for syllable. But his mouth hadn't quite caught up to his brain yet. So, but we used to sit there and talk, and I'd read to him. And also, I've done that with his younger sister. She's now at a point where you can largely understand what she's saying, and she has a whole lot to share. She talks constantly, which is initially you're like, oh, she's talking, and you're like, oh, girl, I'm trying to watch TV. Oh, girl, when you going home? But I love her dearly. But yeah, that video just warmed my heart. I imagine a lot of you have seen it already. If you have not, give it a search. It's maybe the search terms could be black father talking to his son. I don't know. But it's adorable. You'll find it on Facebook, definitely. A lot of people have shared it. In a similar vein, I came across a video that really just almost had me in tears. It was actually of a father who was probably, I would say, in his mid-50s, maybe. His black father. And he was teaching his son how to shave for the first time. And the reason it was so touching to me is because his son was actually trans. And I'm guessing, I don't know how far along in his transition the son was, but he had gotten to the point where facial hair was growing, and he didn't want to have it looking all scraggly, and maybe he wanted a clean shaven look. I don't know. For all we know, the brother could have a beard now. But in the video, it was basically the dad showing his son how to shave, and just kind of standing behind him, really proud. And it was just heartwarming to me, because we so often hear about all of the people who are rejected by family, for not being heterosexual, for not being cisgender, for not being whatever it is their parents wanted or expected them to be. And it was just really, really, really cool to see a father accept his trans son as his son, and really having to accept that, perhaps his little girl was never his little girl and was just his little boy. And just him standing behind his son, just smiling at him. It was an actual commercial for maybe an insurance company. I can't remember, but it was really just, I held it together, but it was a struggle. So yeah, definitely find that one for those of you that are kind of struggling with whatever. You just need something to pick you up. It'll definitely get the job done. Another pickup is something that I saw this morning, which I think came out last Friday, but I didn't see it until today. It was a mini mock, like a mini documentary or mockumentary, from Comedy Central, and it was about the Brooklyn Ball Barber. It's basically about manscaping taken to a whole new professional level, where you actually go into the Brooklyn Ball Barber and he will manscape you. He will also give the boys a nice shampoo and massage. It's comedy. And you got the guys, they just go in there and drop trowel and get in the chair, and he works on them with the straight edge and just designs. It's off the chain. So definitely look up the mini mocks. It does have a hashtag. It's mini, MINIMOCKS. So just do a search for that hashtag. I saw it on Facebook, but I'm sure if you just do a Google search, you'll find it. The shit had me hollering. It would have been nice to have seen a couple of brothers in there, but they did have a brother when they were showcasing, the different, manscaping cuts you could get, I guess is a good way to put it. So yeah, check that out. And on a very different side of things, that was just really, really sad, and really unsettling, and I guess triggering in some regards, was a video of this sister assaulting her ex-boyfriend in the car. And there's a story that goes with it. That it wasn't just they were out on the town and, you know, he said something stupid and she didn't like it. It was not that kind of party. It really was a situation where she was being physically abusive and belligerent. And then when I read the actual story, because the guy had said, you know, I really didn't want to post this. I normally don't post this kind of thing, but folks need to know that this is not okay. And I agree with him wholeheartedly that, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be the biggest man out there. You could be the littlest woman. No one deserves having people put their hands on them. So gentlemen, if you are in a relationship with someone who cannot seem to keep their hands off of you, you need to end that relationship. It's not acceptable. No one deserves that. And I think even in some, you know, there was a lot of the feedback on this thing was basically saying, you know, had it been me, she'd been on the floor, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, that is possible. Maybe you would have put her on her back. It doesn't mean it's right. And in this, I grew up with my father telling me, you know, you don't hit a girl, you don't hit women. But if she steps you like a man and punches you, then punch her ass back. And I was never comfortable with that either. I understood the sentiment. And when I've had women that have actually gotten physical with me, I certainly understood what he meant by that. Fortunately, I've really not encountered that too many times. I've not had to put my hands on a woman in that regard. And I'm grateful for that. But I definitely understand where that sentiment comes from. And I would just say to you, if someone is abusing you in that way, you need to get away from them. It's just, that's not your ministry. Step away. Step away, step away, step away. I don't know what else to say about other than that's not a relationship you need to be in anymore. All right. So picking things up. Out in world news, I'm excited. Apparently the country of Botswana in Africa, I think it's in central Eastern Africa. My geography knowledge is fading a touch to where I can't remember where all 52 countries in Africa are, but the country of Botswana, their Supreme Court has voted to decriminalize homosexual activity, which basically means that LGBTQ folks that were basically acting on sexual desires that were very natural for them, that they've possessed from the grave, not from the grave, Lord, from the cradle and probably to the grave, could get them put in jail, get them placed in prison, and obviously, who knows what would happen to them in prison at the hands of the authorities as well as from their fellow residents behind bars and in the work camps and all these other places. So that's, I reference this because it's a really big deal. Africa has often been seen as the continent that is just way behind in social justice issues and human rights. And certainly in the countries that are dealing with considerable civil unrest, that is definitely the case, where human rights are just, it's just, there's not enough bandwidth to deal with those violations of human rights. And when you have countries, I'm thinking of, what is it, maybe Uganda, and I hope I'm not casting aspersions on any nations where they're not appropriate, but I believe that Uganda and some other nations have laws on the books that basically say that you do this and you get caught, you're going to prison. And of course you had, what was it, in Bahrain in the Middle East, which is not Africa, where they basically were trying to impose a life in prison sentence, if not a death sentence, for engaging in homosexual activity. So this is a huge deal that a nation in Africa outside of South Africa, which has often been viewed as ahead of the curve because it was colonized, so to speak, and you had a bit more of a progressive bent there. outside of apartheid, you know, which was some foolishness and fuckery. And I'm happy that our sisters and brothers and siblings over there were able to root that out, and that playing field is now being rebalanced. But I think it's I think it does us well in this country and in other countries where maybe your sexuality is not criminalized, to recognize that there are other places in the world where the struggle is far realer than we can even fathom. Because overall, I mean, if you go out and have sex in public in this country, particularly in the park and all that, the tea rooms and, you know, the things of yesteryear, which are still going on but aren't nearly as popular as they once were, there's a reason those things were happening back then, and it was criminal activity. Now you do have the option to get on Grindr, Scruffs, you know, Snapchat, hell, Twitter, any social media platform you like, and you can solicit sex or put your kibbles and bits up there for anyone to partake of and slide into your DMs, and y'all can arrange to hook up at your place, her place, his place, their place, and handle your business and go on back home, or you might even make a love connection. Once upon a time, that just wasn't the case. I mean, we're in Pride Month, and I think that it's really important, as we talked about last week, for our younger folk out there to understand from whence we all came, that what things are now are not what they always were, and that the privileges and the freedoms that you have now were not just some random occurrence. They were fought for in blood and tears and lives in a lot of cases, whether it be your literal life or your figurative life that just got obliterated. But it's real. So be mindful of what you got, because looking at the current administration at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, things can be lost. Things that we have now can be lost. So if you are of voting age and you're not voting, I really encourage you to at least register to vote. And if you just happen to make it by the polling place on election day, or you register to vote and say, I'll vote by mail, and you happen to get your ballot in the mail and you got something on it you want to say, by all means say it, and then mail that bitch in, or get that ass over to the polling place, because this is your country too. It's being left to you. Make sure that what's being left is something that you want. Okay, but going back to Botswana, because, you know, I do roam off topic, it's just what I do. Those of you that are kind of wondering, will this world ever be all right with us? It's not perfect, but Botswana changing their laws in this way, a place like Iowa basically saying same-sex marriage is legal because there's no legal reason for it to be illegal. Those are those little bright moments that give me hope, and I hope give you hope as well. Evolution is slow, but it is steady, and it cannot be stopped. So stay hopeful, but also stay engaged. Do your part to change this world. All right. Speaking of changing the world, I love it. Art. As I get older, I'm becoming much more appreciative of art. And certainly this particular artist goes by the name of Okahito. Oakito on Twitter. And his actual Twitter ID is Hidden Desire Art. I'll put a link to him in the show notes. But y'all need to check out his stuff. He does colorful animation that's kind of in, I think it's the, what is it called? Not hentai. It might be hentai style. But he does comics and imagination. It is homoerotic. I'm staring at a piece now, which he put out, I think yesterday, no, on Monday, called Dick on the Brain. It's just, I love it. It's just, I've been in that situation before where somebody's dick is just sitting on your head. It's just, I keep seeing his work on Twitter. I love his work. And I'm definitely going to invest in some of his comics. I don't know if he has, I think he has them available in PDF. So take a look at Ojaquito and check out some of his work. And I suspect that when you add him, if you follow him, then you will also get some suggestions for some other artists out there that are doing some really cool work. So, we got to support one another in what we're doing. A lot of us that have jobs, we get supported by a paycheck. But the creatives out there, the folks that are entrepreneurs, we've got to recognize who they are and support their work. So definitely a shout out to Oaquito, also known as Hidden Desire Art. And Oaquito is spelled Ohakito. So again, Hidden Desire Art on Twitter, and that's also a dot com. So check the brother out. He has some really cool art that he does. And as promised, I'm going to move into my review of Pose. So I'm going to mark where I am in the episode. We're at about 31 minutes. So if you want to skip over this section where I reveal spoilers and the like, then it will be in the show notes. Okay? So, let's get into it. Pose came back last night. Mama and I sat down. When she got in, I said, Pose came back on. She said, ah. I said, yep. I was like, we said we were going to watch this. So, we sat down and watched it, and it was an hour and a half of an emotional tour de force. It opened on Heart, I think it's called Heart Island, where Potter's Field is in New York's in the New York greater New York City area, I guess is a good way to put it. And that's where they basically bury all the bodies that are unclaimed or could not afford a burial. The city or the county buries them there. And it opened there with Pray Tell and oh gosh, I'm blanking Blanca, goodness, going in to see where one of his friends was buried, and it was just really, oh gosh, it was quite an opening to the season. I almost had to take to my bed and just, pull it together until times got better, because I think the weight of what the virus was doing back in the 80s and 90s, it's not what it used to be. That shit was taking people out within a month in some cases. And now it's definitely a much more manageable chronic disease or condition, and that's a blessing, but we're all still waiting on a cure. If you're not taking PrEP, that's an option you may want to consider if it fits into your life and the risks with it are acceptable to you, because there are some potential health consequences and side effects with that medication, as with any medication. But do your homework on PrEP. Condoms are still a good way to go. They just are. Along with PrEP, please. If you're in a relationship and you're serodiscordant, one of you is positive, the other is negative, and your partner is undetectable, perhaps you go on PrEP and maybe you guys can negotiate having condomless sex. I would hope that there's monogamy there, or at least serosorting, harm reduction practices being put in play. I need to bring someone on to talk about that. I have to know several people that can talk about that. So maybe a round table again. I'll see what I can pull together for you guys. But in the meantime, Pose. See how I slid away from Pose? Okay. So the show opened with them visiting someone and realizing that they were quarantining people who died of HIV and AIDS. Even in burial, like the woman at the desk, oh God, I was just, she's like, well, we don't want them contaminating anybody else, and Blanca was like, bitch, they're dead, and she just, It was just insane because the woman's like, I know that, but she didn't. But then she still was like, well, hell, they still might be infecting people. And I'm like, these are unclaimed bodies. These are mass graves. It was just a very powerful and unsettling image. They were literally marking their boxes, like they were radioactive, so to speak, with just this neon pink and green paint. And whoo, yeah. So we pick up the series for season two picks up with the release of Madonna's or single Vogue, which, girl stole from the children. Let's keep it real. But it was nice that she paid homage. It would have been nice to have seen her bring some of the legends of the ballroom on stage when she did performances, particularly those high-profile ones. Perhaps that's what Blanca was talking about. Our time is coming. We're not going to be underground anymore. But expecting that of Madonna was clearly too much because I'm pretty sure at some point she admitted that, she got the idea and everything from going to the balls. But certainly the ball culture didn't quite blow up like we thought. It's still underground in some regards, but it's out there and it's still very much needed. And so we continue the story of the House of Extravaganza. No, Evangelista. Goodness, my memory is shot to hell nowadays. We'll call it part of the recovery, Yeah. So the House of Evangelista, I was about to say extravaganza again, is going about life. Electra is a full-time resident at the house, although she is engaging in some shenanigans, including skipping family dinners on Friday evening, showing up late, and we just get to see Blanca and her family continue to blossom. Pray Tell is part of the family as well. Although he's not officially in the house, I believe, but he is the uncle to the house of Evangelista. And, the boys are there and Miss Angel is there. And it was just really cool to see them all back together again. There was an article that I came across that was talking about the first season of Pose and the idea that it's nice to see black, queer, and trans folk on the air, but did it have to be so focused around their trauma? And I think it kind of has to be for people to really understand what they're seeing. These stories are largely untold. At least not in a way that people can remember them, that stick with them. I was at an event, at a church event with a very devout Christian woman, and she is a huge fan of the show. And I mean, you look at this sister, and you would really think she would be someone that, at best, maybe would say, "Well, I don't agree with that," but I'm gonna let them live. And this was actually a woman who was like hardcore fan. She was fangirling, and she was like, "Oh, I love Blanca," and blah. And she really got into the characters, and she was like, "I understand what Damon's parents were saying, but that was some bullshit. You don't put your child out, And it was just, it warmed my heart to hear. This black woman of a certain age and a certain religious persuasion and devotion that was very clear about that, I guess really supporting the humanity of these characters. And she also got that these people exist, that even though this is a TV show, these are real people, these are real characters. So I really appreciated that about that conversation that I had with her. And Pose, people are still catching up to Pose. They're just like, wait, what's this Pose thing I'm hearing about? And you get to share the story of Pose, and the audience is building, and it's wonderful because these are the lives that a lot of us do not get to see. Even those of us that are maybe in the clubs, and we know some some trans folk and gender non-conforming folk and gender fluid folk who maybe are performers that are gender illusionists that classify themselves as drag queens, or we see the married men that that cross-dress because it just works for them and it speaks to them on some level, or it's an erotic activity. I just remember going up to Sacramento once and going to this club and in the neighborhood, and there were three gentlemen there that were wearing maybe their wife's stuff. I don't know. It was all very short, all very not so great fitting, tight. Short, one of them, when he bent over to shoot, they were playing pool, he went over to shoot, you saw all his ass, you saw balls hanging, and I said, okay, well, maybe that's what he was going for, maybe he just doesn't have the budget to get wardrobe, maybe that's, his wife said, here, you can wear this, and I'll see you when you get home. I don't know the story, but the whole thing is there's a story there behind all those people, and that's what Pose is about. We don't necessarily have, you know, the married husbands that are cross-dressing in Pose, but this, you know, this season the focus is certainly on Blanca and the family. We did lose the subplot with Evan Peters and his wife and the New Jersey, you know, the Tunnel family, and him being engaged with Angel and all that stuff. But this season looks to be very promising. Pray Tell gets it acted up, and you see that fire get ignited within him. And it's interesting because a lot of our youth are often portrayed as being nihilistic and not really caring about anything. And it was really great to see Poppy and Damon and Angel really get involved and invested in working with ACT UP. And perhaps they did it because Pray Tell is so passionate and their house mother said, this is what we're doing. Couldn't tell you. What I do know is that they were present and they were invested. And that die-in at the Catholic church had me hollering. I said, oh, they are really about to fall out in the middle of the church. So I loved the opening episode. I loved that it was a little longer. I don't know how many episodes we're getting, but I'm hoping it's maybe 12 to 16. I don't need 24 because the writing, it gets a little dicey with the continuity unless they're really going to go in-depth on a story. Then, okay, 24 episodes is fine. But I think, you know, unless you're going to give us a level of detail and specificity, I don't need 24 episodes. Give me a good 12. Give me a strong 16. I'm cool. Electra. I know that heifer's up to something. I'm putting my money on her being a sex worker, perhaps a dominatrix, because she seems so well suited for it. And I could see her just in a nice leather bustier with a stiletto, you know, working some executive over. I think she'd love it as well. And certainly, whatever she's doing is paying well because she is regaining her past glory when she was getting Mr. Ford's coins every month. So be curious to see what happens with my girl Electra. Blanca, I hate that you lost your job, girl, but I like that you said I'm going to open my own shit, and she's going to do it. I know she's going to, it's going to be a journey, but she's going to get there. I think she's going to get there. So it's going to be really cool to see what she does. Interested to see what happens when Damon's boyfriend gets back from the I'll Be Sure tour. I think it's going to be a good season. So I'm really excited. And yeah, so I'm going to stop my review now. But all right, so we're going to move on into the main topic. And, you know, I'm always wondering, what do I talk about this week? What do I talk about this week? And I have a list, a ton of topics, but they don't always speak to me yet. Much like my characters when I'm writing, unless they're speaking to me, I don't want to give you anything inauthentic. So this week's topic is trauma, basically. What is it? Why am I talking about it on this show? And how does someone even know if they've been traumatized? And those questions came to me in my DMs on Twitter. And I appreciate the question. Basically, that person, I cleaned up their questions a bit because they said, basically, what the hell is trauma? Why the fuck are you talking about it all the time? And, why should I care? And so I changed why should I care to how do I know if I've been traumatized? So the first thing I will say about that, trauma is a pretty complex thing in terms of what it could be caused by. So today, because we're already at the 40-minute mark, I'm gonna kind of run through a list of things that can qualify as trauma. And I got this list from the wellnesssociety.org. And I definitely, if you're looking for tools, I definitely suggest you visit them because they have a lot of really cool stuff there, including some self-help workbooks. They have a mental well-being toolkit planner. They have a stress and auto-stress workbook. They have a happiness and mindful living planner. They have some really cool tools here that you can access, and I believe they're free. If you need some help or you need some structure, oh no, they're not free. Pardon me. I just clicked on the link. Not free. My wig is snatcheth and askew a bit. Okay, so it's not free. So it looks like these toolkits, planners, they're all $15.99 each, or you can buy all four of them for $49.99. So I apologize for saying they are free. They're not free. They all look to be $15.99 each. So, but I mean, certainly, if you are struggling with just mental health and trying to get to a point of wellness and being able to get out the bed each day and dealing with whatever anxiety you might be having, or just finding that motivation to get through the day and not check out, it might be worth it, particularly if you have the resources to access these things. Definitely. But even if you can't afford these, do some searching around. Go to this site, thewellnesssociety.org, and look for their products and therapy worksheets, and take a look at some of the language you're using and use those as search terms on Google. You will find what you need at a wonderful price, whether it be free or $2 or $50. But $50, that's still less than you'd pay for a counseling session with a professional. So consider it. That's what I got for that. So, also, if you happen to be near Bridgeport, Connecticut this Friday morning, what is it, the Connecticut Getting to Zero Initiative, which I think is an HIV prevention initiative, focusing on, I believe, black, gay, same gender loving, and men who have sex with men. That initiative or campaign is having a training and it's free. It is going to be this Friday, June 14th, starting at 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. It is a free training. It's titled Engaging Black Gay Men in Trauma-Informed Care. Search for that title, Engaging Black Gay Men in Trauma-Informed Care, on eventbrite.com to get your ticket, which is really a reservation. Tickets are free, but you want to reserve your seat. And take a look at that if you're in the area. That's a way that you can help folks out. Trauma-informed care is the rage right now, and it's basically important because it assumes it doesn't assume that people are okay, or that their problems are just very topical and not deep. Trauma runs deep. So when we talk about trauma, let's get into some of the things that qualify as trauma. So there's a tool that is free on the wellness society.org site, and it's called Understanding and Healing Trauma. It's a fluff-free guide, and they have, I think, 24 different things that could be classified as trauma. So the basic idea or definition of trauma is typically a one-time traumatic event, such as an accident, an injury, or a natural disaster. So living in Southern California, earthquakes are our thing. And after going through the first major quake that I can recall as someone that can remember it, you know, that Northridge quake, I was in high school. I was in marching band practice that morning, and we're on the football field, and the ground starts moving, and I look, and I see the light poles, the stanchions are just swaying, and it freaked me the hell out, and it was crazy because, of course, you know, we were in a pretty good place to be, save for the poles that were probably about 40 feet tall, maybe 50 feet, falling over and crushing us. But outside of that, we were in a really good place to be because there weren't buildings around us. But like our football stadium, the concrete that was inside of it, it cracked in that quake. It was a big quake. Northridge was fucked up. And so I remember going back to class or going to my first period after that, because we had band at zero period, which was like 7 o'clock in the morning. And I remember going into class, and the aftershocks were crazy because some of them were very obvious, but we had like this old Lazy Susan bookshelf. It was like a metal one, and it like spun around, and the base of it was metal. And so it was a little off kilter, so it kind of, if you swung it, it would like click or something because the base was going from one side to the other. We were sitting there in class and it got silent for a moment and we could hear that damn thing just rattling. Just the ground was just all of these tremors. It just was constant. And it was like that all day. So I am very sensitive to the ground moving in that regard. You know, when I talk about rock my world, you know, if a gentleman wants to rock my world, then I'm okay with that. But if the world is rocking and 'cause we're sitting on the San Andreas Fault, it's not that far from where I live, which is a major fault line. I believe the university where I teach is sitting on a part of the campus is sitting on top of the San Andreas Fault, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm acutely sensitive to earthquakes. So whenever I feel anything that could be an earthquake or that's similar to an earthquake, it could be an explosion, it could be a truck driving by, a train, I'm already on red alert. Like, do I need to go get in a door frame? Do I need to go get under a table? What do I need to do to protect myself? And a lot of us that live here, we just have that mentality. Some of us are less anxious about it than others, but we all have gone through the earthquake drills since we were kids. And stop, drop, and roll if you're on fire. All these different drills, we've been through them, so they're just part of our existence. Another trauma could be childhood physical and or sexual abuse. And, you know, those speak for themselves. You know, I won't belabor or beat those up. Those speak for themselves. I think it says here experiencing active childhood emotional abuse, such as parents or caregivers intentionally scarring, demeaning, or verbally abusing you. Those are huge. A lot of us have been traumatized by our upbringing, and we kind of dismiss it because so-and-so didn't hit us. You know, we got fed every night. And it's like, yeah, you may have been fed every night, but you may have grown up being called a black bastard. Or you may have grown up being called a black bitch by one of your parents. You know, or you were called lazy and trifling and just all these different things that, and maybe you were lazy and trifling, but you didn't need to hear it every damn day. Perhaps if your parents knew you were lazy and trifling, they needed to be very directive with you and say, hey, I'm going to need you to wash some dishes. Be sure you get to them dishes before you go to bed, because if you don't, I'm going to wake your ass up and you're going to wash some dishes before you go back to sleep. And don't say a word to me about it. You know, it's like you might have that parent and you might consider that abusive, but the deal was made. They said to you what you needed to do and you didn't do it. So consequences, that's not abuse. Okay, I'll put it that way. But certainly you being demeaned, being bullied perhaps at school, all those different things, those are all traumas. They say here, oh, what is it? Okay, it looks like they, okay, yeah, so they also add on saying, maybe a parent or caregiver expressing negative attitudes towards you or having developmentally inappropriate interactions with you, which could be a lot of different things. It could be, your parent talking to you actively about their sex life, when you're like 10 or 11 years old, and just getting into detail. Like, maybe your parents are fucking, but you don't need to know how daddy's laying it down or how her mama's laying it down. You don't need to know that. You just accept the fact that you got here because they were fucking, and they probably are still fucking because that's what folks who love one another do. And hopefully they're doing it to their utter satisfaction. That's what you hope for your parents. I know it's kind of gross for some of y'all, but you'll be all right. But yeah, that emotional abuse can be just as damaging as physical or sexual abuse, and that's actually shown in brain scans. When I was teaching the fatherhood classes, we talked about the impact of trauma on the developing brain of a child, and the fact that your brain is not done fully forming until you're about 26, 27 years old. That stuff that makes you an adult, that higher level reasoning, the decision making, that executive decision making, so to speak. How do you handle a moral dilemma? Realizing the complexity in decisions to be made in life in general, as opposed to things being black and white, that comes later. You may be aware of it, but you may not know how to handle it. But your brain, between the ages of 0 and 5, 0 and 6, massive development. Huge. So if you are experiencing trauma that creates a physiological response in you, like that fight or flight response, cortisol going up, adrenaline going up, your body kind of gets used to being that way. It makes you quote unquote a stress monkey. And that cortisol can actually throw off your hormones, and which in turn will break your body down for starters, like physically break you down because you're always prepared to fight. That's why prison can be so traumatizing if you feel like you're not safe and secure. You're always on alert. You don't know who's behind you. It's hard to trust people. That's the essence of incarceration, or being institutionalized in some cases. That's why it's so traumatizing for a lot of people. So if you are a young child and you're not sure where your next meal's coming from, or mom's always yelling at you, or dad is kicking your ass, not spanking you, but kicking that ass, that's trauma, and it impacts your ability to grow and develop correctly, your brain. There are parts of it that literally just either don't develop fully or they just aren't engaged. They're not working. You can look at those brain scans of the prefrontal cortex of an abused child, or an abused adult. You will see that there's not a lot of activity going on in the front of their head, and that's where all the really high level shit is happening, and there's nothing going on there, or it's very minimal. Whereas a child that's raised in a healthier home, a healthy environment where they're not traumatized, that area is red. It's a lot of activity going on there. Lots of blood flow, their brains are resilient, they understand how to tackle failure. They understand success. They just have a more realistic view of the world and a more healthy vision of themselves. So when you talk about things like trauma, being neglected, witnessing domestic violence, which was a thing I would talk to the dads about. These were homeless fathers or fathers at risk for being homeless in a lot of cases. Some of them were actually folks that were executives and were older and just like, I'm 55 and I'm about to become a dad. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. It's like, I never thought I'd be a dad. And then I marry this 30-year-old and she's pregnant and I'm going to be a dad in 2 months. What the hell am I doing? We saw all of that in the class that we taught. And I taught the section on the developing brain. And they were always blown away when I said, here are the slides. You don't believe me? Here you go. So when your child sees you fighting, whether you're putting your hands on mom or not, just you yelling and mom yelling back at you and you being in conflict, look at a child when they experience that. You'll see what impact it's having on them. But that's trauma. And it makes you more sensitive to that when you become an adult. Because children that grow up with trauma, they're more apt to have substance abuse issues and challenges. They're more likely to engage in high risk and reckless sexual behaviors. They are more prone to psychological challenges and mental illness. And it's not to say that because you grew up in a home, you're going to have these things. You're just more susceptible to it. Some of us manage to come out reasonably okay. We're able to get somewhere. Some of us, shit is a crapshoot, and the odds are not in your favor. So, I definitely, if you're in a relationship with someone and they maybe get a little upset with you and raise their voice, or they take on a tone that doesn't cross a line, but it's a little spicy, and you have a reaction that's really kind of out of line with that or over the top, that's a consequence of trauma. This shit shows up. You can't outrun it. Once you've experienced it, you've got to deal with it. You've got to recognize it, do your work to heal from it, and then you will see things change. I'm dealing with my own stuff now. We all are dealing with our stuff. It's just a matter of how early in your life do you realize, oh, I have stuff. Let me get busy on dealing with this shit. Some other things that they have here, experiencing sexual violence. Obviously, someone sexually assaulting you, whether that be the full-scale rape that we might see in a movie or television, or simply someone grabbing your body without permission. Granted, I had an experience at the DC Eagle that I think I've talked about on the show before, with Dark Boy, where I said I basically was borderline raped walking from one end of the second floor of the bar to the other side to get to the bathroom. Like, I was groped, I had fingers down in the crack of my ass, my balls were, it was crazy. At least 15, 20 people just manhandled me while I was working my way through the crowd to get to the bathroom. And I have mixed feelings about it when I think about it. I mean, at the time, it was like, oh my God. It was just really like, damn. And you couldn't really say anything or do anything to anyone because you weren't sure who it was. It was a darkened room, full of people wearing black leather. It's like, so you're just like, folks talk dirty to me. There was more than one man that rolled up behind me and just put both hands on my ass and was in my ear talking about, hey, let me have some of this. It was a lot. Now, at the time, I was like, damn. But also, because I was a young floozy, I was also flattered. And I had a very bodacious booty back then too, so I was like, it's a lot to grab. Now I got an old man booty, but we gonna try to get that back. Squats don't fail me now. Leg lifts don't fail me, but that's another story. But there is a certain amount of trauma that I'm recognizing from that, where I am very protective of my person. And it did feed some intimacy challenges that I had, just in the fact that I struggled to be physically intimate with people. Not so much sexually, not in that way, but just, do I hug people or don't I hug them? Kissing was a very big issue for me. And it's like now there are several people that I kiss, as a greeting, as a hello, as a goodbye. And if I get. I'm more apt to do that now, but initially I felt like doing that gave the wrong message or gave a message I didn't intend. So I was just very hesitant to do that, and part of that was just a reaction to what I experienced. And I wouldn't say that it's just this full-scale hardcore trauma, but I have a tendency to normalize the abnormal, that it didn't kill me, so it is what it is, and I got through it. And so my therapist is like, "Nah, that's trauma. Stop doing that shit. Let's get into that. Let's open that box up, peel that Band-Aid, take that tape off. What you got under there?" "Okay, it's a gaping wound. You didn't know that. Now you know. Let's deal with it." So that's what it is. And that's what the show is, sexual healing. I mean, it's not all about sex, but you healing can be a barrier to sex, or sex that's affirming, that is in your best interest. So, yeah. But moving forward, I don't want to get too bogged down here. Losing a parent or a caregiver, possibly losing your job, or being bullied or harassed or excluded, you know, the bad girls from the playground, that's trauma. It's being teased at school can be traumatizing for some. Not everybody deals with it the same way, but if you already have issues at home where you don't feel safe and secure there, and you go to school and people are, you know, kicking you, spreading rumors about you, making jokes about you, you are a laughing stock to most of your classmates, the whole kids can be cruel thing, that's major trauma. So hopefully I'm not sending a whole lot of folks into a frenzy and running to therapists, in a very triggered way, but just understanding these things all have consequences in your life. Another thing they have here is experiencing chronic loneliness. Just this idea of you need social interaction of some kind in certain amounts for you to feel okay, for you to feel loved, for you to feel seen. And if you're not getting that, that can be traumatizing to you, particularly as a young child. You know, we know, well, maybe we don't know about the babies that were basically born and their parents abandoned them. And I think they did a study, or it was an unofficial study or observational study. There were kids in an orphanage, and the ones that the nuns got to play with the most, they survive. The ones that didn't get played with, that got no human touch beyond being fed like a bottle, but they didn't play with them, they didn't talk to them, they had no interaction, those babies died. So there's an impact there. So those of you that have babies, or maybe you don't, and you're like, "Why are all these parents so freaking nuts over their kids?" It's because that kid is their favorite person in the world, and they also understand that child needs stimulation. Their brain is growing. The more you talk to them, the more you let them experience, the better off they'll be. With my nephew, I scooped his little ass up and was talking to him like he was an adult from day one. He was 3 years old and we had a conversation. No, 3 hours old and we had a conversation. And, you know, I read to him. And I never talked to him like he was a baby. And he never really acted like one either. You know, his mother was, she taught him his anatomy. You know, he has a penis and he knows that. So when something hurts, he's like, "Mommy, my penis hurts." And when she was like, "Now look, you can't be touching other people's penises. You can't touch vaginas. You cannot touch breasts." He knows exactly what she's talking about. Because we know that our little boys, like any other kid, will be curious and precocious about the human body, and they will touch stuff that, out of pure curiosity and trying to learn, that's being criminalized now. You've got 7 and 8 year olds, 10 year olds being arrested for sexual assault because they grabbed some little white girl's titty that ain't even a titty yet. So my sister's aware of all that, and she has raised him to be fully aware of what his body is, and to also be aware of what his social needs may be. He will tell her, "You're not paying enough attention to me." When his younger sister got here, sibling rivalry was real. And, you know, he forced his parents to really put together a plan on how they were going to make sure that the baby got the attention that she needed, but also that he got the attention he needed. Because now he wasn't the focus of attention anymore. Chronic loneliness can be tough. People that isolate themselves when they're depressed, It's traumatizing, even though they don't want to interact with anyone. They really do need to interact with people. They need to have an interaction. They need to be focused on someone other than themselves and how they're feeling. Because if you're depressed, you're anxious, or whatever it is, you're down in the dumps, that shit is it's devastating. And the more you focus on it, the worse it gets. It's like a death vice. One of the best things you could do for someone who is suffering from depression in that regard, maybe not force them out, but give them something to do. Help them get engaged, maybe in service of someone else. Volunteering tends to be a really good way to deal with depressive episodes, focusing on someone other than yourself. But if you want to know how to be of help to someone who is depressed or suffering with mental health issues, do a Google search. Madam Google, she runs this shit. She'll direct you to some good resources. Another thing that can qualify as trauma is experiencing stigma and or discrimination. So now, I imagine that my core audience for this show has experienced discrimination because, well, we may not be white. I'm sure there are some folks that are white that listen to the show because I got two consistent listeners in Russia. I don't know who they are. Maybe they're trying to hack my shit. I don't know. But maybe there's some black folk in Russia that listen to the show. I couldn't tell you. Write in. Let me know who you are. But discrimination, which is something we as black folk experience on a fairly regular basis, if not every day, we're mindful of it. Just the trauma of previous discrimination, us being educated about slavery and Jim Crow. That shit is traumatizing to understand that that happens, to understand that somebody like Emmett Till at either 12 or 14 years old was accused falsely of propositioning some white girl, and he was basically beaten beyond recognition. As a 12-year-old learning that, I'm sitting there in class like, what the fuck? That could have been me. That is traumatizing. And then the realization that that kind of thing could happen. That is trauma. So you are critically sensitive to any possible instances of discrimination or prejudice against you. The stigma of having any of having any sort of chronic health issue, the stigma of having HIV is still very big. The stigma of coming out of being gay or people knowing, your sexual orientation, which is not the entirety of you. It's just a part. It's a small part, but it's a stigma. And there's trauma associated with being in the closet, and then trauma associated potentially with coming out of the closet, or trauma with going back into the closet. All those things are sources of trauma, and they haunt you in your sleep, in those quiet moments in your mind. That's what comes to fuck up your peace. Okay? And the last one that's on their list here is experiencing poverty. And I've already kind of referenced that. Just this idea of economic instability, not knowing where your next meal is coming from is traumatizing. Living with an abusive parent, not knowing who you're coming home to. Those are all big things. Not knowing whether you're going to have a home to come home to today. You have people that are living in poverty, where you have parents that are stretched to their limit, that because of the impacts of poverty, they're traumatized, and they may take their trauma out on you as their child, or you as the neighbor. There's a reason why the ghetto can be rough, that it can be this dysfunctional and hazardous place. You have a lot of people that are going through a lot of bad shit, and they're trying to do the best they can with it. Now, you do have some folk that are just making bad decisions that reflects their core. You know, I'm not going to excuse people for the violence that they do, whether it be social, emotional, sexual, physical, verbal. Violence is violence, and it's unacceptable. But sometimes you need to understand where it's coming from. Not excuse it, but understand where it's coming from. But more importantly, you need to have a better understanding of why you are who you are and why you are the way that you are. Because a lot of us don't always understand that. And some of us don't want to know. you feel like it's easier to not know. It's better to know. Because then when you know, you can at least start taking some steps to do something about it. So I hope that answers the question about what is trauma? Why do I talk about it on the show? Why does the show even exist? And how might you know if you've been traumatized or you're dealing with trauma? So definitely pick up that handbook. It's called Understanding and Healing Trauma, the Fluff-Free Guide. And you can get that from thewellnesssociety.org. All right, so I'm going to take a quick moment and return for the letters and closing out the show. All right, so now I'm back. Okay, I'm back. So now we're going to go into our letters portion of the show. Up first, I actually have an update that I forgot to share last week, actually. It was a two-hour episode, so I had done enough. But I did get some DMs about some social media bullying and shaming that I had spoken out about when I first resumed the show after being out for a while with my illness. There was a butch trans woman that was being bullied by some other trans women and some cis heterosexual men and also some gay men. And, you know, this sister she definitely was a butch trans woman. Some would say her look, because she did have facial hair and her clothing was not terribly feminine. It was actually very much like if you think about like a child dressing up in their mother's clothes and having these ridiculous combinations where you're just like, child, why you got that on with that? It was that kind of thing, but not exactly like it where you just kind of looked at her like, sister, what were you going for now? Because I'm not seeing it. It was that kind of thing. And the facial hair, you know, didn't do her any favors. But the reality is, that's her damn business. And so I got some different messages from people. Some of them chimed in and basically suggested that it's not my place to get into grown woman's business. And I said, okay, perhaps it isn't. Perhaps I'm wrong for wading into that argument. What I will say is that I saw my sister, assuming she identifies by she, her, his, or she, her, oh gosh, I can't, she, her, hers, there we go, goodness, Lord, my brain is shot to hell, assuming those are the pronouns that she believes reflect her best, I don't know, she doesn't make that specification anywhere that I saw, but what I saw was someone who was being themselves. They're presenting themselves, saying, this is who I am. I'm butch trans woman. Period. She was very clear about that. And she was being hammered by fellow trans women. She was being hammered by just about anybody that saw her pictures. And, you know, perhaps she wasn't the prototypical picture of femininity, but it's not up to us to police her look. It's up to us to either celebrate that she's found herself or to keep our mouths closed about our displeasure with her look. Because she's not saying anybody else needs to look like her. Now, perhaps you disagree with the way she looks, or as some people said, she's not a real trans woman and she's making a mockery of being a trans woman. Maybe she is. In her intentions, maybe she's not. But to me, as an outsider, and I'm not a trans woman, so I can't truly speak, but I would say that her decision to make her transition yet retain her facial hair or some vestiges, quote-unquote, of masculinity, folks that don't know any better might even say that's just like trans women who basically elect to not do bottom surgery. You have people that are just like, I am thoroughly confused by the fact that you're keeping your penis. I don't understand it. The same way y'all don't understand why she is keeping her facial hair. Or there are trans men that have kept their birth name, which is generally, usually cast as a female name. You know, they are Mr. Samantha. Folks just like, I don't get it. You need to either have the discussion or just accept that this person knows what's best for themselves. Because the reality is, it's been a long road for them to get there. So I'm not going to tell you what the trans experience is. I can't do that. That's not my ministry. That's not my lane. But what I can tell you is, this person here clearly has been through some shit. And it's not our job to heap on more shit. Now, if her behavior is out of pocket, if she's not being a good friend, she's not being a good member of the community, she's being destructive to herself or to other people, then check her ass. But because she wants to wear facial hair and dye it, and you know, she had like 20 pictures laid out on her Instagram, and, you know, she was giving you looks. She was serving face. And I'm sure that there was somebody out there that was loving all that face. And loving whatever body she got going on underneath that makeup and under them clothes. So all I'm saying is, my trans sisters, because I often hear y'all argue and tear at one another because so-and-so is not pretty. So-and-so's wardrobe is not this, it's not that. I hear these things and it pains me, but I understand. It's just, that's not my lane. But just understand that it pains me. And if I see someone being harmed by it, I'm going to speak on it. And I'll try my best to stay out of grown women's business. I will. But when you are tearing down a sister that's, you know, 100 to 1, and you're tearing her apart, what kind of ally am I letting that happen? That's my sister. Hail to the no. Back up off her with that shit. Let her be. All right. So now moving into this week's letter. This letter is from Andre. Andre says, my boyfriend is moving nearly 600 miles away to get his master's degree. Yay for the boyfriend. He asked me to come with him. I want to go, but I don't believe that I'm at a point where I am okay with uprooting my life like this. I'd rather not be in a long-distance thing, yet I don't want to end the relationship either. I'm not sure what to do at this point. Hopefully you can get back to me quickly because he is waiting on my answer. Okay, so Andre, this one's it's complex. It's as tough as you want to make it. You have a lot of things here going on where it's like you want to go, but you're not sure you're ready to uproot your life. Is that because you're not really up to it? Or you don't feel like the relationship is at the point where you need to do that? I don't know. So the first thing I would say to you is to really take inventory of this relationship. You don't say how long you guys have been dating or in your relationship. Certainly if it's been 2 months, unless you just know he's the one, child, you best stay put. Especially if you got a job. Jobs are hard to come by out there. Now, if your job is shitty and you could get one someplace else and you want to go, then go. Be prepared to live on your own if shit don't work out, but go. But if you do have an established life there and you're just not sure the relationship is at that point or that you're at that point where you can make this move and make this major change, then you probably shouldn't do it. You're clear about, well, you say you'd rather not have a long-distance relationship. Understandable. It's not for everybody. And you said 600 miles. That's not a quick drive. That's some time. That's a commitment. And yet you don't want to end the relationship. So you can't have it both ways. You really need to decide for yourself what an acceptable relationship is for you. Like, what is the floor? What are you willing to live without? And what are you not willing to live without? Start there. Like, what is it that you need? If you need to see him 3, 4 days a week, then this is probably not gonna work unless Skype or any other video conferencing software will get it done for you. If you can phone bone or video bone, cool, do that. That gets you your other time. But he's working on his master's degree. He's gonna be busy. He's not gonna be able to just up and come home every weekend. Even if he's only has class 2 days a week, which can happen in a grad program if you do your schedule right, maybe he's a Tuesday, Thursday class person. So he comes home after class Thursday, stays with you until Monday, and then he drives back. But that's a long ass drive. That's a day drive. So yeah, maybe not. But what are you willing to do here? What's the absolute minimum? Start there. Identify that for yourself. Have that conversation with him. Like, let him know what it is you do want, but let him know, more importantly, what you need. Those are the things you cannot live without. What you want are the things that you can negotiate on, that you can find some sort of compromise. But if you're not ready to quit your job and possibly move away from family and other friends, you're not ready to do that, I don't recommend you do it. However, if you feel like this guy is the one and the risk is worth it, and maybe you feel like it'll help you to grow in some way, consider it. Even if you say, look, okay, so I'm gonna go with you, but I want to live separately. I'm not ready to live with you yet. I'm not ready for you to be my everything. You've got to figure that stuff out for yourself, and that's part of this idea of what do you need versus what do you want in a relationship. So I feel like I'm repeating myself, Andre, so I think I'm kind of done responding to you. But truly, decide for yourself, then have the conversation with him and negotiate, and then make your decision. All right? So I'm getting back to you within like 3 days. So I feel like I've done well because that message came in Monday. All right? Best of luck to you, Andre. All right, so it's now Six Brown Chicks time. I do love my six sisters and what they bring to the world. So let's see. This week we're going to do question three and question six, two of my favorite numbers. So question three reads, we don't have an open marriage, but I spoke to my wife about it. She was furious. I explained that sleeping with others would make our love more intense. I started seeing others anyway. Then I caught her on a date. She's seeing him overnights, etc. How to end this? Okay, in what? The marriage? The creeping? Yo creeping? Her creeping? What are you trying to end? Y'all don't need to be together, period. It's just y'all aren't communicating effectively. Like you said, you approached her and said, I'm interested in having an open marriage, and she flew off the handle. And you offered your rationale, and it sounds like she wasn't okay with it because you started seeing others anyway, which suggests that she said hell to no. All. Then you caught her on a date with somebody else. So not only did she tell you that you couldn't see other people, but then she went out and saw other people. And not only is she seeing somebody else, she's sleeping overnight with him. And you want to know how to end this. I think if you end anything, it's your marriage. Because either that or you end the lies and the secrecy. And you just basically say, you know what, babe? I know that you didn't want an open relationship or an open marriage. However, I've seen you, or I caught you on a date. I don't know if she knows that you caught her. You may want to go ahead and confront her with that. And if you decide to confront her, you need to come clean on your shit too. You can't just jump on her case and then act like you didn't do anything wrong, 'cause you did. Both of y'all lying and cheating on one another and tipping around, which is not how a marriage is supposed to work. I'm not saying it has to be monogamous for the rest of your days, but I am saying you need to have that negotiated in some way. You should not be keeping secrets from your wife like this. Particularly if you're practicing unprotected sex with multiple partners or even a partner outside of her. You don't know what folks got. You don't know who else they're sleeping with. You don't know their intentions. Perhaps they want a baby. Did your wife sign up to be paying child support for a child that she has nothing to do with? I'm highly doubtful of that, based on her reaction to you possibly having an open marriage. So you either need to end the lies or end the marriage. Period. Y'all need to have a conversation. All right. Up next is question number 6. And this one says, I've caught my boyfriend cheating 2 times with 2 different women. The second woman lived an hour away and he traveled to meet her. She got pregnant but didn't keep it. Talk about dodging a bullet. I went on one date with someone else and he's acting like I killed his soul. I do want to work it out. Help. Sister, why? Why do you want to work this out? I don't understand what it is you're getting from this relationship with him, because obviously you're not getting respect and fidelity. You're not getting fairness. Like, you went out with someone else. Why? Like, did you guys negotiate that you're going to start seeing other people, or was this revenge on your part because he stepped out on you? You don't have time for these games. You really don't. Yeah, it's not in your best interests to play games like this. But okay, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't know what to tell you here. I feel like both of you deserve better than this. Because men will often talk about your physical infidelity is much more damaging and devastating to them than you sleeping with another man, but I really think it's the other way around. That's what I believe to be the case. It killed him because the space that was reserved for him and the support that he thought was for him and him only has been shared with someone else. That's devastating because guys often have a hard time being vulnerable in that regard. And even though what he did to you was unacceptable and off the chain and probably was about as hurtful to you as what he did to you is, oh gosh, yeah, as hurtful to him as what you did, you know what I mean. Y'all both have hurt one another. I feel like even if you didn't sleep with this other guy, just the fact that you went on a date and shared parts of yourself potentially with another man is what bothers him more than you having sex with the guy. Just my opinion, because what we know from the research is that men tend to take the brunt of the emotional fallout from a divorce. Wives tend to keep the friends that they have cultivated. And men tend to kind of have their relationships that they had before their marriage, they tend to decay a bit. Sometimes they're able to maintain them. Like if they're really, if their friends are like aware and open to that, like they recognize, oh, he has a wife now, so she's going to be first priority. He's not going to be able to go out drinking every Friday after work. Or he's not going to make it to happy hour, 3 nights a week like he used to. But if you're still able to maintain a relationship and you're still able to have things with that to keep the relationship strong, then husbands tend to not do so badly. But it tends to be the case that men can struggle to form relationships or friendships, and then when they do get married, they have more difficulty maintaining them. And the relationships that they do build during the marriage tend to be to other married couples. And when you divorce, there's a possibility that she's going to get the friends in the divorce. Even though the other husbands may really like you and they're really cool, they have to deal with their wives because they're hanging out with you. And whatever had happened with you to end your marriage, their wives are thinking, if they hang out with you, then the same shit gonna happen to them, and they not having it. Okay? So that's why I say that maybe it did kill his soul, but you two need to have a talk, truly. And the reality, you call what he did cheating. What do you call what you did? Do you consider that cheating? Or is it not cheating because you didn't have sex? You don't say that you had sex. So I'm going to assume that you didn't. He got some other woman pregnant, and she didn't keep the child. So clearly he's out there raw dogging. He was making plans because the woman was an hour away. Y'all need to have a conversation about what is and is not acceptable within this relationship. If you're going to have a monogamous relationship or an open relationship or, a negotiated openness, you've got to figure out what that is. And what is it going to look like? What are the boundaries? What are the deal breakers? What can you and can you not do? If you're going to be jealous, you need to have a contingency plan for your jealousy. Because you can't agree to this relationship and then decide, after he does what you agree to be jealous and give him hell for it. At that point, you need to basically have another conversation where you say, okay, so babe, I'm really. This happened and it fucked me up and it makes me feel this way. So I need to amend this agreement. And at that point, it's on him to either negotiate that amendment with you or to basically say, no, I kind of like things the way they are. At which point, you probably are going to need to divorce him or separate from him. You don't say if you're married. He's your boyfriend. So, but even in marriages or in relationships where it's kind of you've gotten to the expectation of monogamy phase, not everyone actually takes that actual act, even though the relationship is at a certain point emotionally and where they're like, yeah, I have some feelings for you. But I still want to explore other fields. There's still some other back 40s I want to plow. Okay. So as I say, it's a lot of dick out there, and if you found the one that works for you and you can ride it into eternity, then I applaud you and I'm happy for you. However, if you are in a relationship and that dick is just not doing everything you need to do, or you may find yourself more oriented toward polyamory, then again, conversation needs to be had because you can't keep doing it this way. It's dishonest and it's only going to breed resentment and discontent. I can't find my words today. Wow, I swear my words are struggling. But yes, yeah, so you gotta be careful with that. Okay? Alrighty. So let's see here. Where am I? I believe that concludes the six brown chicks for the week. Did we have anything in HBCU Confessions that tickled my fancy? I forgot to search for them. HBCU Confessions. Okay. Okay. Oh, I'm not dealing with that. Okay, there's. Oh. Okay, so here's one. Wow. That's a lot. Okay, so this one came in 3 hours ago from maybe Alcorn State. It just says ASU. This one says, so my dad has been confessing his love to other women while being married to my mother and having 3 kids. I will really go to war for my mom. Crack his head and whoever this other woman is. I'll break that little iPad too, by the way. The other woman knows he's married. Well, okay, so I don't know if you're male or female, but whatever the case, you probably need to stay out of this. It's your parents' business. If your mom doesn't know anything about this, and if he's doing something that puts her at risk, maybe, then you might want to get some receipts and go and shut that shit down. By and large, the general rule tends to be stay out of your parents' business. Just is. In this case, I don't know. This one's kind of tough. Dad's wrong. Dad is straight up wrong. If your parents are still together, like they are not legally separated, then he's wrong. If your parents are separated, then you need to stay out of it, basically. But if they are still together, then you might want to have a talk to your father and be like, Dad, this shit ain't cool. So you need to put your big boy drawers on and have a talk with your wife, because I'm only going to stay quiet for X amount of time. You know, don't immediately run to your mom. Give him the opportunity to make this right, in as much as he can make it right. Where he may have to just say to her, babe, you know, I'm in love with another woman, or these other women, or I'm just out here hoeing. So I don't want to be married to you no more. That may just be what it is. And if that is what it is, it is what it is. It's none of your business. Basically. Hate to be dismissive, but it's none of your business. All right. I think that concludes today's episode. I want to thank you for hanging out with me today. Hopefully you found some useful information in there, and maybe you recognize that you have some trauma that you might want to start addressing and begin healing from. If you do, get the help that you need. This is not a time to be brave and be pussy popping, so to speak. It's time to be bold and move forward. Okay? All right. So if you want to reach out to the doc, you are more than welcome to send an email to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to me on Twitter. Y'all love the DMs, which is fine with me. I'm at Dr. Pookie, Pookuie. Or you can send it to the show's Twitter feed at PodSexual. We're also on Instagram at SexualHealingPod. And we're on Facebook under Sexual Healing from Top to Bottom. And as always, we are a proud member of the Pods by QPOC family. We are a member of the Pods in Color family, Podern family, and I believe there's one other one, but I can't think of the name of it. So I'm a very delinquent member of that family today. Oh yeah, we all win. There we go. But I think there's another one. But again, blame my head, because it's struggling, not my heart. And y'all, have a good week. Keep it sexual as best you can, safely, sanely. Always keep it healing. And be a blessing out there, not a curse, particularly in them sheets. Y'all take care.